space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Things can only get better.
And Dr. Squee.
Drag on. Although I almost didn't want to take it off. Seems like a good day to be in red. I don't know why. I don't know.
And we're here to talk about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery Labyrinth. Before we do that, though, we have got a bit of Trek news.
Oh, and I didn't have my banner ready.
So the first thing that was announced is the first bit of casting. We assume Tilly's going to be in the Academy series, but the first official bit of casting is Holly Hunter as a captain slash overseer of the Academy.
Well, yeah, she's a captain and chancellor is the wording they use, which I'm
that was it.
An admiral is the chancellor is the...
Yeah.
Captain now.
Like, the announcement also made it sound like she's going to be the lead of the show.
It did, which she may well be. I mean, Tilly may not be the lead.
I don't think Tilly's strong enough to be the lead of a show.
Yeah, sadly, I don't now. I would have done a year ago, but... Yeah, it's a shame. She's not had much to do this season at all. But anyway, Holly Hunter's fantastic. So that's great bit of casting.
And it does feel like everything they've done with Tilly, though, even though she's been underused, seems to set her up to be in the Academy show. So the sexual love interest. Yeah. They talked about struggling with the students, which I think by the end of the series she's going to have got over, ready to return for the series. So yeah, it's
she's just not going to be the lead. But
do we know that for sure? Because it's like, I mean, it's captain in there, but like, you know, Michael start off as
the announcement. How I read it made it sound like the caster is the lead for the show.
It did sound that way.
I haven't read any of the articles. I just saw the pictures and everything.
But either way. She's a great presence to have in the show.
Very good.
And I'm sure she'll do a fantastic job, whatever the role is.
Fantastic actress.
That's great news. Possibly less great, but we'll see how it plays out. Apparently Simon Kinberg is who Paramount have got their eyes on for the relaunch of the movie series. And Simon Kinberg has a bit of a checkered history in terms of quality. I mean, I'll put out the good one first of all. So he wrote X-Men Days of Future Past, which I think is arguably the best X-Men film. For my money, I'd say it probably is.
I could go with that.
He also wrote X-Men The Last Stand and X-Men Apocalypse and X-Men Dark Phoenix, which I think it's fair to say are not the best X-Men film.
They're probably three of the lowest ranked
X-Men
films, and there is now, what, seven movies in the franchise?
Oh, there's more than that.
And the Wolverine ones.
Yeah, if you count your Wolverines and your Deadpools and your New Mutants and all the rest of it,
So is he doing the writing duties on...
We don't know. As producer is what they've said so far, and He has been a prolific producer as well as writing those X-Men films. He's produced the majority of the X-Men series, as well as various other bits over the years. So it could be an Alex Kurtzman type role, but we'll see. We'll see. Maybe don't let him do the writing.
I'll say this, though, because it's like it is... I mean... We will say that it's the Paramount TV movie where it's the origins of the Federation.
It's not a TV movie. This is a cinema release.
Haven't they announced? Because I saw something earlier talking about the prequel one going straight to Paramount Plus.
No, apparently not. Apparently they want it in the cinemas.
Yeah.
Maybe that was its original sort of death.
And the way it's been described is a little bit weird because it says it's about the birth of the Federation, but it says X number of years before the 2009 movie, and it's like, well, it It can't be, because the birth of the Federation has already happened before the Kelvin timeline started. So it's prime timeline if you go before the start of the 2009 movie. There is no Kelvin prehistory to the Kelvin timeline.
I suppose if it's, it's a weird way of putting it, but I suppose the 2009 thing is the history for both of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my thoughts are maybe they're just using that as a frame of reference because it's the most recent. And
it's almost a reboot of the movies, like the early years.
Yeah. So, and they have described it kind of as a reboot, but it's like, no, we don't want a reboot anyway.
I don't think we need a reboot. We had a reboot with the Kelvin. The Kelvin timeline movies were a reboot. It hasn't been that many years to do another reboot.
Yeah, I think the Kelvin movies, what was so good about them, but it's a one-shot deal as far as I'm concerned, is the way they did it. Just there was just the line on the bridge where they go, it's like, no matter what we thought our futures would be, they will be different now. And because you've got the Spock Prime in it, it meant everything that we'd enjoyed happened, and this is happening now. They both did exist, and they even referenced it in Discovery. I just watched back the series three episode where you get Unification Part 3, and they talk about the fact that Spock disappeared. So it's like that's all in universe, even though it was a reboot, which is genius. But if you do it again, then I don't think
they did it very nicely.
It's why it's always problematic doing prequels.
Yeah.
And especially with a show like Star Trek that has such a vast history because it's been because it ain't just a movie franchise, it's all the TV shows, it's vast. So it's really problematic to do a prequel reboot.
And the thing is, since the launch of Discovery and all the other shows we've had and everything, they've firmly re-established Star Trek in popular culture, and it's all prime timeline. So we definitely do not need a new timeline at the moment. No. But anyway,
I think that's the mistake DC have made. I hate the fact that every film's in a different universe now. Like, it's three Batmans at any given time. It's just...
I'd be really happy if you want to reboot, if you want to do movies... If they don't want to green light a legacy series, but all of us, I think, in fandom want it to move forward. So let's have legacy movies. Let's make that a movie series, and that would work.
Oh, that would be genius. But I think what they're going to do is, this is my guess. I think they're going to get this movie out of the way. Sorry, that sounds bad, but they can do that one, the Section 31 movie, start the Academy series, and then we're going to get an announcement about Legacy. That's my prediction, because they've cleared so many shows out of the way.
That's what I'm thinking.
I hope that's going to be the case.
The one thing would be kind of fun is, because you are talking about the birth of the Federation here, so you've got possibilities of bringing Enterprise crew, including Captain Archer. That would be nice.
That'd be good.
Everyone would celebrate that. I think you could bring in Captain April, because you guys were telling me that it was originally in the animated series, but it was used in so many novels as well, and kind of extended universe.
April in Strange New Worlds. So.
Oh, I know, but I meant I always thought it was mentioned in the original series, but you guys in
like. Oh, you mean have him as Captain April at that
Captain
point?
April, and,
I'd be happy
bring
with that.
Bring that in. You bring in Archer. You could have so much kind of fan service around a new story. Like, there are ways of making this really exciting. It's not something I was calling out for. I didn't want another prequel, but we've got it. So let's get the best version of it, you know?
If that's where you're going. I don't know if it's lazy that they keep doing prequels or what. It's
I don't know. I mean, if it finally deals with the Romulan War, does the stuff we didn't get in what would have been the fifth season of Enterprise. Great, let's do the Romulan War. And that's the only reason I can think of going back to that.
And to be fair, Enterprise sort of ended at the birth of the Federation.
Exactly. So, there's room there to pick it up and do something with it. So... let's see. Anyway, we'll put that aside because there's nothing concrete. We will move on to Labyrinths, but...
Before, Oh, sorry. After that, before we get into Labyrinth, I did want to make one point, but after you.
No, go on.
Oh, just an ongoing rant about how crap Paramount Plus is.
Oh,
just,
go on.
Just if the makers of Paramount Plus are watching, just and I had this problem with the Klingons also on your the certainly Fire Stick version of the app. Can I just say now, like, I get it, you don't automatically put subtitles on, but please assume I don't speak Klingon and I don't speak Breen. Put the subtitles as standard.
Oh, I assume
I had to switch on the subtitles for the whole, like, you know, I had to switch them on and off.
Was what the Breen said subtitled in English?
Did you not get that? Because, like, there was like,
no, I assumed we weren't meant to know what they were saying.
Ah, no, no, basically. Yeah, no, they do, but they don't automatically put the subtitles. You see, this is what it leads to.
They don't automatically put the subtitles on when it's an alien language.
It got to a minute, and I was like, well, it can't be that we're meant to just sit here for, like,
I thought we were. Yeah, I thought we were meant to, like, empathize with Moll and not be able to.
They talk some smack about Moll, and then he goes, like, oh, but she's here, so we better, like, honour her by speaking in her language, and then they switch. And then there's a bit later, which there is a bit of information. There's nothing you can't fully live without, but there is a bit of information.
I can't believe that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean,
the subtitles...
I think the same
happened with the Klingons, but I'm not sure. No, actually, I think the Klingons were on screen. Fair
the Klingons
enough.
Were fine because we had it on Netflix back then.
Yeah, it was
then.
On Netflix. And when it was on Netflix, you put it on English automatically, but you could choose to have subtitles in Klingon on Netflix.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, I remember that, which was really cool
in season one.
No, because it's like it's laziness, because I've worked out why they've done it, is so they can just plant the same thing on every region of Paramount without doing any
changing the subtile automatically,
but,
of course.
But, like, you know, there's so many streamers who do that, and it's just an option that I think, like, you know, there's just something
it's
in the program
lazy.
That says,
yeah, that is
language.
Laziness. You're right.
That's the only thing I can think of is that why
that, I think you're right, but it's ludicrous, and I'm gonna have to watch that again now. Actually, you know what? I'm fine.
I
watched it twice.
There's nothing you lose too much on, but it's
right.
Like,
but I'll remember it for next episode. Thank you. Good tip. Good tip.
Yeah, because
subtitles on Casabrina in it.
Because actually, funny enough, you know what? With Klingons, there are actually some people out there who speak Klingon. I think the Breen-speaking population are even less.
No, Breen is a brand new language. If you've learned it already, good on you.
Well done.
But I'm guessing there won't be many.
There's one
anyway,
guy I'm just going, it's like, well, I found it perfectly enjoyable. Breen.
Well, on that bombshell, then, we'll dive into Labyrinth. But before we do that, we have to play our new game, which is Did She Say the Thing? And we can exclusively reveal here on Retrek that for the episode Labyrinths, she said the thing!
Oh, I love that we got a poster for it. Oh my god, there is a younger me from but a year ago who is, like, somehow this clip of us whooping over Let's Fly, he's going, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, really? Like, the three of us from a year ago are reporting us three for therapy over this.
The highlight of my week.
Yes,
it gives me reason to watch Discovery with an attentive ear.
And it should have been.
I was going to do it as a video clip with some sound. But then I thought, if I do that, we couldn't speak over it.
No, we need to celebrate.
They tease us with it as well. They know we're waiting for it, and they tease us with it.
So, yeah. So I understand most listeners, viewers will probably want to drop off now that we've established that she says the thing this week. We totally understand that. We know what you come here for. She does say it. But the episode itself, then. So we start off, Locke is still dead. But Moll says she's going to fix it.
Yeah.
So that's all right. Moll's going to fix it.
I called this last week.
You did?
That is why she wanted the device to bring Locke back.
Well, they told us that last week. They heavily speculated that was the reason.
I called that would be one of the things done with it.
Now, Elliot, and you often call things that I don't, and I always give it to you, but I will say, I think everyone saw that one coming in this case.
However, I think the other thing that you called, and we may as well talk about it now, book reviving Quajon, I think we've got a bit more to back that up this week because it gets a bit of the life route.
Yeah, the route of the world or whatever it was.
So is he going to use the life route to resurrect the whole planet? Yeah. I think you've absolutely nailed that one for how the season's going to end. Then, yeah, the Breen then are pretty much using Locke's death to motivate the troops, effectively. They're like, I'm really liking his uncle this week. I think he's just fantastic. He just wants to kill everyone. He don't care about anything.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely having none of it.
You should have the stuff he was saying in the like the bit which you guys did.
I will do now.
I mean, Jesus, he was talking about click and collect Primark.
He's a very angry man.
I wouldn't do that again. I'm sorry. That's the last one. I'm not proud of that.
Yeah, make it the last one.
Well, he doesn't see...
You have certainly a threshold for whimsy, sir.
He doesn't see this episode out, so may be the last chance we get to discuss him. No. Just as I was starting to really like him, I just think he's great the way he's just like, right, we'll kill them and you don't you dare talk to me. How dare you? He's great. You know what? He's like Alan Rickman, Sheriff of Nottingham, but the Breen version. Absolutely love him.
I do, but I mean, she was just brilliant. Like, I do love that dynamic that she knows he's got him over a barrel.
Yeah.
At least for a while, like, she does call the bluff a bit too much and then it kind of comes to confrontation. But I love that. It's like, right, well, I've just said in front of everyone, what are you going to do? You're going to kill me right after I've just given them a rousing speech about their kind of scion.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying Maul now. Like, when they first came in, I was like, meh, but they've gradually revealed this mythology around them and it's actually turned into something that's really got me engaged with it. Like,
this is like, as a protagonist, this is far better than with the Tensei.
It's far better than that
guy who screamed and killed and caused us to burn.
Well, he wasn't really the baddie, to be fair. It wasn't his fault.
Yeah, no, but it was like the protagonist still, wasn't it?
The antagonist,
I was sort of on the same lines as Jim. If it was just going to be these two random people, like, there wasn't enough for me to hang a jacket of the series on, whereas now they've given them more context and more reasons, and I think it does work better. Like, I didn't dislike them, but I was like, we are spending a lot of screen time on just two baddies of the week, mate, or, you know, of the series, even. Elliot, we got some fighting words from the chat. I'm just warning you. After I called it, I think it means.
Was
that the Locke one? I can go with other people calling that Mole was going to bring Locke back, but I think I called Book would resurrect his planet.
I'd certainly not heard that anywhere else. And that
I'd not heard that. And I think you're absolutely right with it. Yeah. Okay, so. Yeah, Elliot, I'm glad you were on board with them from the start. Took me a bit longer, but I think what they've built around them's been great.
Yeah, I just thought they looked interesting straight away, that there was ought to be something there. And fair play to Discovery, because Discovery is, let's be honest, they're very hit and miss on how they build up characters.
Yes. Well, that's the thing.
I think they've done a really good job with these two. Even though Locke's in a coffin at the moment, I think they're still doing a good job with it.
Well, it's becoming more of an engine for the story in death. But I mean, ooh. I think the thing is, though, Elliot, you were bang on it, but it's like, I think me and Jim have just been hurt too many times by Discovery. It's like, no, there's no way they've got it through that.
Hang
much.
On.
They're just going to be some lame, just B-list baddies, but no, they build all this around it.
Yeah.
What if the progenitor's technology to resurrect the dead can only be used once And Buck has to choose between his planet and giving Mole what she wants.
I'm not sure if that
would be the dumbest
right.
thing.
I don't think that'd be right because the progenitors went round the galaxy.
No, I know. I'm just
maybe
thinking...
they programmed it. So it's like you get one use. Like we can't trust you with this technology, but we can give you one use because you've proved yourself worthy.
I'm just thinking they've done a lot to establish this Mole and Buck connection.
Well, maybe what he'll do is put the life route in a Locke's coffin. And it'll be like when
they'll do both of them,
planet, and you'll have both at once.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, if they use the progenitor's power to save Locke over a planet full of people, like this annoys me in modern Doctor.
That'd be wrong.
He used to be in, like, there was even a second Doctor adventure where the Doctors were given choice between his and his companion's life or a whole planet, and he goes, "Well, it doesn't even compare." I'm sorry, look, obviously, I don't, you know. I would do anything to save you, but I can't do it. And in New Who, it's always like, no, sacrifice all the planet people for this one person. It's like, I know life isn't mass, it isn't the trolley problem, but
but this is Discovery. They do things like that.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's bullshit if they do that.
It'd be absolutely ridiculous if it was sort of like conflicted. Do I save one person or billions? Both of... There's one person who's dead, and there's billions of people who are dead. Now, I have a choice. Do I bring back billions of people or one person? And I honestly don't think there should be any conflict.
No, well, maybe there won't be. I've just invented this, but I don't know. I can see Discovery doing it. I can see Buck going, right, I'm going to bring my people back. And then Mole goes, oh, no, but what about Locke? And gives him, like, the puppy dog eyes and him going, I've had time to get used to my planet being gone.
I'll pretend you're my daddy.
Yeah, I just...
Have we gone into Discovery the porn parody?
No, because...
You know what?
Buck was named after her dad, Buck. And that was his bedroom. So she'll go, yeah, I'll call you daddy.
Don't stop saying it like that. You're making it Discovery the poor.
You know what? This is a problem for 2 weeks' time if it happens at all. I apologize for bringing it up.
No. I'm going to say, because this is just what Discovery would do. I've started to have faith in them. I've gone, it's like, this is going so well. I've even started to enjoy Let's Fly. Like, it's all going so well. I think they might stick the landing, and that's just...
They might?
You've got to totally screw up the landing.
I think they're going to totally fuck me by making
me believe they're going to stick the landing and they're not. I think that's...
I've got an even better ending to the whole show. They have the debate and it's, oh, do we save Locke? Do we save Quajon? And Michael's like, no, we've got to guard the technology. We can't use it willy-nilly. And they're all there pointing phasers at each other. It's like a Mexican standoff. And then you just hear like someone go, oh, he's a pretty boy then. And the guy with the parrot alarm clock has nicked it and brought his dead parrot back to life. And they're like, damn.
And then Admiral Silver Daddy Bear just goes, he flew, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's the end. Anyway.
That should be the closing line of the entire show, we flew.
Yeah.
And, we know what the closing line has got to be.
It's like... Burnham's about to deliver it, and then Admiral Silver Daddy Bear just pushes her off camera and goes, we flew.
No, they can't steal a thunder in the last minute.
I think he'll have something better that he'll be on the bridge of the ship when she's about to say it, and he's off to come out with his and go, warp me.
Maybe. I don't know. What would Admiral Silver Daddy Bears be? I don't know. Answers on a postcard.
Warp me.
So, the librarian. Is she a Klingon?
No, she's the same species as the president was in Star Trek.
I heard that. So at first I saw people saying she was a Klingon,
And they've done really well with the makeup that it's very recognisable, the same species.
So which species was that? I didn't quite catch.
I can't remember what the species is.
The president out of Star Trek VI.
Right. Got you. Yeah, no, I can picture him.
And I think they've done really well with the makeup that they haven't sort of like gone, you know, like what they did with the Klingons that you completely changed.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they've done really well that No, it's obviously the same species still.
Well, to me, the weirdest one they did was, because I really enjoyed the episode When Memory Serves, but they show, and I thought it was just such a fun idea to say previously in Star Trek and show
cool.
episodes from The Cage. But it was so weird because they showed the original look of the aliens from that planet.
Yeah.
And then they were different.
They totally changed it. Like, not even something which, like you're saying, this was very true to the original, even though it wasn't a copy. Like, they could have done something true to it with the round head with the veins in it. You could make that look cool with modern prosthetics. But they went for a complete redesign. I mean,
no, they didn't.
The only thing I would say with this is, like, sure, throw in one of the species from the President of Star Trek VI, whichever species he was.
Yeah,
but
I can't remember.
Why not make it Bajoran? Betazoid seemed kind of, I don't know, that seemed like it would tie in.
Well, it's just a Betazoid book, but they've got books from everything. So.
I think the thing
wasn't it Betazoid who set up the thing?
Yeah, but that was one of the scientists.
That was
the librarian.
Blew like 1,000 years previously. But I think the issue, like, I have no problem with them using the Betazoid, but the issue if you use the Betazoid is there's no alien. They just look human. You can't distinguish a Betazoid from a human. So you don't get that. And I think it's that where you go for a different species in it. So you've got the makeup and you can tell it's an alien.
Oh, I get that. It just felt to me because the episode was so strong on the Betazoid angle and you've got this kind of massive library, which seems kind of like, it could be a Betazoid thing, you know, links in with the Betazoids, I think, kind of library and kind of being very cerebral and about the mind and everything. I just thought it just tied in a little neater.
I never thought about it, really. I thought she were a Klingon, so it shows what I know.
Yeah.
So she's giving, like, all this sort of speech and introducing it, and I think Michael's a bit rude here because Michael's like, can you cut that bit out? You know, we're in a rush. Like, you need to be nice to her. You need to get this book, not just, you know.
Yeah.
Go on, sorry.
No, I just said yeah.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah.
We're just agreeing with you. Yeah, I think she's a bit rude.
Stop,
like, trying to piss her off.
Yeah, it seems like you could have just framed it nice. Like, I do get it. Like, the clock is ticking.
Later on, it kind of makes sense where she's like, can you be quiet so we can concentrate while we try and get through this deadly plasma storm? You know, that's fair enough.
That made sense when she's still going in the, like, flyback seat in the pants.
Yeah, but first I thought, no, you need to be, just be a little bit nicer, Michael. Like, you know, let her do a spiel, I just want to
put this out here. If Detmer had been at the con,
that's not a problem.
And I have noticed we've got the kind of, like, it seems like the random kind of new crew of the week. Like, it's just so interchangeable, the bridge crew.
I was going to say
they were introduced, I think it was a few episodes, I don't think they were there from the start of the season, unless I'm wrong.
But third episode.
But it does feel like we've got, it's certainly a new bridge crew, and, like, there seem to be faces which appear and disappear. But, yeah, because, like, this, the lady at the helm, the other week, she had this line as if we always knew her, like, because it was like, hey, do you think we take this up? It's the only way I know how to do it. And it was like, that's a lot of swagger for someone we've never met before.
I think what we're meant to, like, what they're going for is, these two have always been on board, and maybe they're beta shift and Detmer's.
Yeah, like they're doing a check off with it.
So, they've always been part of the crew just because we've never seen them. And let's be honest here, we know it when they came on in episode 2 or episode 3 of this season, I'm not sure which one it was, we knew pretty much about them as we do the rest of the bridge crew we've seen for the previous 4 seasons anyway. So what's the bloody difference?
Well, that's the thing, and if you don't mind me kind of jumping ahead a bit to tie it into the recent thing later, because it's like, this is the thing, it's like, fine, if you're going to give them the swagger moment, that's fine, but, like, then show us a bit about them and, you know, who they are as a person. Like, that's why this Reese bit in this episode felt like, it's like, first of all, I've never really noticed it before, but I think it was him taking the helm. He just looked like he had some Wesley Crusher energy for me with his age. He looked very young.
I just had a thought.
And, well,
I'll let you finish.
Okay. But yeah, I just, I, it was like, yeah, he seemed to be very competent, but the only thing we've ever seen is him being good at his job, and there's just more of that. And just, I don't care because I don't know him personally. I don't know what he's like playing poker or in his off time or doing a gym workout with a crew. Like, you know, all the
you
things.
You know he likes Constitution class ships, which is why they don't send him away on one.
There's that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's me.
I just had a thought. I wonder if Detmer and Awoto.
Washington.
Washington. Are going to be in the Section 31 movie, and that's why they can't be in this season. Much.
Maybe.
If you're going to be heavily in that movie, and that's why they're not available for this.
Possibly. I mean, I did read an interview with one of the producers, and the reason Doug Jones has been largely written out is because he had to do the publicity rounds for Hocus Pocus 2 when they were filming this. So that's why he's got such a reduced role, which is doubly a shame now. We know it's the final season. It's a great loss.
It'd be really interesting if maybe the last episode, because obviously, again, we kind of speculate they might have had some inkling this was going to be the last series based on so many things. But I wonder if the last episode's going to be a wedding between him and his Volpe.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, finish with a wedding.
Like, even if it wasn't there originally, if it's gone back and been done as a reshoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, that's a nice button where you get to have Michael giving a speech, you get to bring everyone in together. You know, it's so much you can do.
There's also the other thing, a lot of these actors might have been signed up for 5 or 6 year contracts or 5 year contracts for a season for this show, thinking that's where it's run. But because of COVID and writers' strikes, etc., we're now in the seventh year, even though we're in season 5.
True.
It depends on.
Some of the contracts have sort of gone, oh, hang about. These have got clauses. If we want them into year 6, year 7, that the wages go up by X amount.
I will say this, probably not, only because things like writer strikes have happened before, so they probably do have a clause of it's like so many seasons, not so many years. It would be
possibly,
my guess.
Yeah.
But then you have got like the COVID and all that where things were slowed down. How are you going to write that into a contract?
You owe us five seasons as opposed to 5 years.
But that's why I say that.
Who knows?
They've maybe signed up for 5 years or 6 years or whatever.
But I'm guessing they've done it by season, not by years, for reasons of things. But what I mean is, like, because before they've had writer strikes, so they probably know to write in as opposed to doing, you give us 5 years, you give us 5 seasons. Because
I would guess so.
That maybe explains why Doug Jones can go, no, I've got a... responsibilities promoting this
yeah, it's usually his TV show I mean, it might just be a case that because they have had him on contract so long, if they're like, look, I've got an offer for another show, they might just be like, okay, you know, you can do it, we owe you. I don't know, speculation. But
my only further speculation would be, I think that they knew that this series was make or break. So whether or not it was going to go on, probably the idea of releasing a few cast members and saving a bit of money when you're bringing Rayner on as an extra, like, probably was quite enticing to save a bit of cash when they were most generous about money for I'm guessing.
I actually imagine that if Doug Jones has said, I can't do most this season, that Rayner character was written in after he said that.
Could have been that way.
That they brought him in as a replacement.
Very possible.
Quite possibly. Anyway, so the away team, of course, consists of Michael and Buck. But I do feel like this episode, at least they justify why it's Buck. Like, we've got this artifact for you. That's why you need to go along.
He's also, he's telepathic, so he is a natural fit for this mission as well. So there's...
Burnham didn't actually call him for the away team.
No, this is true. It was herself.
I know that we still get Buck, because why wouldn't we have it has to be Burnham and Buck on an away team? You have to have a reason every week. And this is a different one, that where they're going, call for him to be beamed down.
Yeah, I didn't mind it so much this week, the justification for it.
It made sense, and I think it's going to fit into the end with
things. And I want to give a shout-out to like how good the library looks. Both the exterior shots of it looked fantastic, and the interior, it just great, just this huge, big, multi-level. Yeah, it looked amazing.
We've got artifacts from everyone from over 1,000 years.
Look, all that is gravy, but I will say this. Man, I finished watching this episode, which is a heavy Michael being kind of like psychoanalyzed episode, and then I did put on Unification Part 3, which is a great episode, but it's got a huge chunk where Michael is having her basically therapy session. It's like, oh, 2 Michael therapy sessions in a row was a lot.
Yeah.
They've got to have one a series at least, and it's like, I mean, they're not my favourite episodes, I've got to
say. We'll get a bit more into it when we get there, but I do find it interesting, some of the stuff they do. The librarian makes a joke about we've got a dungeon, and then she says it's not a dungeon, it's more of an oubliette.
Now, I thought this was absolutely brilliant.
I feel like that's it's got to be a nod to Labyrinth, the film,
exactly. You've called your episode Labyrinth, you've got an oubliette. Of course, it's a reference.
Because oubliette is not a word that's that commonly used. So, that was a nice little nod.
It was a lovely little Easter egg, and I think 99.9% of nerddom got it.
Yeah. In fact, she's quite good, this librarian. She also makes a joke about book being in the library, like as I get to look at a book in the library.
It's nice to have a book come into the library as opposed to one going out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like her. Bring her back. Let's have her as the Starfleet Academy librarian.
I honestly don't think we'll ever see her again as a character. But
I doubt it. But I like
she was really good.
Yeah, it's good when you get these one-off characters that are really good. And this is all where Michael goes into the trance and gets the vision of Book. And, this is where we start to get into the Michael psychoanalysis. I feel like she's a bit slow on the uptakes. Like, this is the most important place to you. And it takes her a while to go, it's because it's the mission. Like, that seemed pretty obvious. Like, it's the most important place to you because you're very focused on
And why do you pay this book? Because he's the most important person to you.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that, was it? It was because she'd not managed to resolve the tension with Book earlier this week. Earlier on in the episode, Book was still a bit annoyed with her about going along with letting Mol go. And she was like, oh, that's why you book, because I couldn't resolve that. And my thing is not letting people down and not always getting things resolved. So that was sort of, we'll talk about it then since we're onto it. But I feel like this is doing two things. Like, on one level, this is, with 2 episodes to go, having Michael effectively turn to the audience and go, yeah, I know I'm a bit self-important and that it's always all about me. And on a meta level, that's the show going, yep, we know.
Yeah,
but we're still going to do it.
But you're still doing it anyway because you're doing it in the middle of one of those episodes and you're kind of justifying it after 5 seasons of it. So on one level, I'm like, that's a really cheeky, audacious way of doing it. And it works within the drama of the episode. And I don't mind it. But on the other level, it's like, yeah, you cheeky sods. Like, bugger off. We know what you're doing.
Do you know what makes me think of? Is like in The Next Generation, you go through 7 seasons, basically, of Picard always acting like he's in charge, always acting like he knows what to do. Very rare is the moment where we get it to see him doubting himself. And it's like usually because he's fancies a girl and doesn't know what to do with them. But in the 7th series, you get an episode where he kind of ends up getting psychically linked to Beverly. And she is like, when you give commands, you don't know what you're doing. Like, you don't always know. You just deliver with confidence. He goes, well, I have to project that. And it's like this big moment where he reveals that he really does have the self-doubt to himself.
Yeah.
With Burnham, the problem is, it's not that I mind her having these moments, but it's like it's all the time to the point where it's like, well, when are you actually concealing in the way you're saying you do? When are you being stoic like the way you're pretending like you are?
Yeah, she's letting it, she constantly lets the entire crew know that she's got self-doubt.
Yes.
Which isn't good for the rest of the crew.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like weird because
Kirk had confidence, Archer had confidence, Janeway had confidence, Sisko had confidence. You go through them all, they've got confidence, and then you come to Burnham and she hasn't got that.
And add to that, like, A, she's always saying that she shouldn't be there. Like, she keeps on going, well, I don't know if it's me, I don't know if I'm Starfleet, and like that's every other episode. And you were saying about Kirk again. Third series, we get the one where he gets split in two. I believe that's third series.
First series.
Oh, it's first.
It's one of the very
but
early
it's
ones.
Very rare, is what I will say. It's very rare. You get one episode where he kind of splits in two, and then he's doubting his confidence and like, well, maybe my evil side gives me that. But it's so rare that it's notable, even if it is first season. Sorry, I will withdraw that point a bit.
And anyway, on another level, like, I don't mind it because it is all tying back to, you know, in the very first episode, she did the mutiny and that destroyed people's trust in her and she's had to rebuild it. And of course, that's going to be an ongoing struggle for her and a problem. Like, I don't have a problem with this in isolation. It's just that when taken in the context of the whole series, it doesn't entirely ring true. And it almost feels like a mea culpa for focusing too much on her but still continuing to do it, and it's too much after the fact to sort of throw that out as it's almost trolling the audience, like going, yeah, we've been doing this for 5 years now and tough, and that just feels weird.
I'll add to that. How about doing something flipped on its head? Because when you said that about kind of her mutinying at the beginning, that's a really good point. How about this being about who she is now, because she's learned that, supposed to have being still full of self-doubt, it's like, no, I've learned that I am Starfleet. I learned that I am. I've learned that I don't need to do this anymore. All this self-doubt bullshit. Like, I'm better than that.
You're right, that would have been better.
Like, I think actually, because I mean, I don't want to do a disservice to her or the character, but I think, like, I think there is enough there that we've shown that she is actually competent, really competent at her job. The one thing we do learn about our crew here is that they're competent about their job. Some of them, that's all we learn. But with her, we've learned that. Why not give her that moment of confidence?
Yeah, and we've seen her to be a good captain and to get the job done and everything. And
I'm not just thinking me, I'm thinking my crew. I've earned that.
We've seen the character progression. But Burnham herself doesn't believe that she's had character progression.
Yeah.
And almost lazy writing that you're still pulling on.
It's almost insecurities
that we had in episode two.
Yeah.
It's almost like the show's trying to have its cake and eat it, because it's going, right, so Burnham projects this image of being the most important person in the world, but that's to cover for her insecurity. It's like, no, but you've made her the most important person in the world.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. So that's not a feature of her character. It's a feature of the storylines that you've created around her. Like, I don't have a problem with the idea of a Star Trek show being more focused around one character. And to that extent, it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you guys that we don't get to know the bridge crew. So I'm like, if you look at it, we've still got an ensemble that is as big as we had in TOS, and you know that doesn't bother me, the structural side of it. It's the way it's implemented at times that has not worked for me.
Well, I think that's why the problem is there, because I know what it's like when you've got bridge crew that she obviously has to communicate to the bridge crew on a regular basis if you're going to set so much of the action on the bridge, which they're doing this show over 5 seasons.
True.
So not to build up these characters is just, it's shockingly bad.
No, I know, but then you could say, if we're going to look at that, like if you look at Next Gen, once Wesley left, the person who was at the ops thing changed constantly and we never got to know that character.
Yeah, but
so, you know, there's not...
but there's... it wasn't the same character sat there for 5 years.
What I'm saying is there's not a law that says every Star Trek show we have to get to know this character, this character. But yeah, it feels like they're trying to acknowledge a flaw within the show and play it off as though it's a trait of the character, and so therefore, you know, oh, it's not really our fault, it's Burnham's character. Yeah, but you made that character and you made all these situations.
Yeah. I also throw in that I think what annoyed me the most as well is that in this series, again, it's what I'm kind of saying, is that this series, they've done so much of a better job with her, and I think Raina playing against her has been a big part of that, but it's made her fly, if I may use that. You know, it really has made her do better because she's the emotional center to his kind of like logical stern side. And she even kind of says, it's like, yeah, we could actually be a bit sharp. We could be a bit more professional. She admitted that earlier in the
season. I'm going to be really controversial here. And I'm going to agree with Ian, but I think...
That's happened eventually.
I think part of the reason is that we haven't got Saru there. That she's actually,
you're probably right.
She's actually better because we haven't got Saru constantly going, yay, get your emotions out, yay.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Because he's really good, he's kind of affable.
I'll agree with you and all that. Yeah. We've got that antagonism because it's working a lot. And we do love Saru. This is why it's controversial.
Yeah,
but I think she's working better without him.
I would agree. I think it brings out a better side of the character, certainly.
And the thing is, even there's times where I like Saru. I love Doug Jones's delivery of Saru so much. His performance, like even the fact he walks on his legs, like he must have been playing all the time from that. But what I will say is, I've even noticed times where it's like, wasn't it? That was great, like Saru's speech there, but it's always agreeing with Burnham, even when it doesn't make sense for him to agree with. Like just 5 minutes ago, he was angry with her for mutinying on him, and the next minute he's like saying everything she does is right when it's not really. I noticed that on a rewatch quite a bit, so I'm really tied into that. But it's sad because I think Saru's great, but
Burnham was presented, wasn't it?
No, you're right though.
Saru is a great character. Loved Doug Jones. But Burnham is working a lot better as a character this season.
I agree.
Because Saru isn't there.
Can I also throw this?
She's got that antagonism, which is something that we had in the original series. And the first couple of seasons, when Gene was massively involved in TNG, he didn't want antagonism. And some of it was awful. And then we got antagonism once he was sort of like pushed back by Paramount. And the show came alive.
I will give you this, though. I think this is the best way for Star Trek to do antagonism. Because antagonism doesn't always have to mean two people don't get on or they're enemies. It just means they kind of have different approaches. And I think that's what they've done really well. It sort of feels very fitting to Gene Roddenberry's original vision. You've got conflict, but not... Like, to the extent, I think writers can get a bit lazy with, like, right, we need conflict, so let's have these people hang each other. And it's like, well... You don't have to go that way. You can have conflict and still have them get together at the end. Oh. And surely that's what we want to project into our modern world. Like, I think Star Trek's a great allegory for what we want to see in the world. And when they show that it's like we can argue till we're blue in the face and then hug it out at the end, I think that's a great Star Trek message. Sorry.
No, it is. It's right. And that's what it boils down to. Like, we've got really good writing between Raina and Burnham, how they play against each other, the two sides. And you didn't have that with Saru and Burnham because all the time, it gives great speeches about the stuff, but he's agreeing with everything she does. He's an enabler.
Yeah. He 1 minute he's telling her off, the next minute he's great. You're right. He's an enabler and he doesn't even know it.
Yeah. Let's go back to my favourite new brain guy for a minute. There's a bit where... He says, send me the clues. And they say, no. And then he says, give me the clues or the archive will become ash. Like, I just love it.
And Burnham just sheds a tear. It's like, don't bring up Ash. That was my other boyfriend.
Oh, no, let's not bring up Ash.
Oh.
And
he quit Discovery because he was getting a new series of Star Trek.
He did, bless him. Yeah. There's a cute bit with Adira and Stamets where they say the things at the same time, and Reno's like, "I love it when you do that."
And then she's like,
"Go on, then, do it again."
Yeah, and they do.
And did you know?
I want to get some more pissy Reno as well. That I love her doing this, but she is so great at kind of really like just giving a dig at Stamets, like which is like Stamets will say something, drawing out an olive branch, and then she'll just go in for the kill.
Can we rewind a bit because we're going right towards the end here, where we're sorting these out because we have Reno has to beam down because Michael's got it, and we get someone else in the chair. And the big question of the week is it Rice or is it Rice?
It's Reese this week.
No, it's Reese.
I mean, it
just sounded better how I said it.
It does. Rice or Rice is a good one. I actually thought...
Which yes, one knows when he takes the helm? Bryce is nowhere to be seen. They are the same person. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just
saying. Like, yes, he's an underdeveloped character, but I actually enjoyed his scenes here, and he seemed to do a good job taking command.
I just didn't feel invested.
No, I mean, it's maybe too little, too late, but...
anything to do with the bridge crew, it's going to be nice to see them doing something with the bridge crew.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's going to be too little, too late.
And because
of what happened with
Arian.
I was close. You know I'm rubbish with names.
Me too.
But what happened with Arian? As soon as we do start seeing some development with bridge crew, we're forever worried that they're going to die. That
this is true.
Oh no, but we only had one scene with him as opposed to the whole episode suddenly being about. But the thing is, it's so easy to like have these moments because again, the only thing they ever show us is that they're good at the job. Mm-hmm. Any scene they're in is all about their job and what they're doing in the mission. I don't care about that if I haven't seen them sync a Raptor Geno with kind of one of the other crew members. I don't care about that if I haven't seen them do something which isn't to do with their fucking... Like, I want to know them as a person. Again, we got to ship things, but that's still kind of related to their job. That's not an offbeat moment of... Like, when you saw... Oh, God, it just wound me up. Sorry, Jim, I know...
No, you're right.
But it's like the moment where we saw Linus. The piano, and Reese... leaning over it, like I was going, oh, fucking it. I know they're not going to do it, but I would just love to have an offbeat moment with them just as he plays the piano, just having a chat. I would love that so much.
Yeah.
It does show, though, that there could have been potential with Reese, with the actor and with the character, but this is probably the best we're going to get.
This is going to be an eternal thing that there's going to be so much lost potential with some of the people we had on this show.
Yeah. And again, it's never the actor.
No, it's not.
No, it's wasted potential by the writers.
Because the moments when they have had... Debner and Awashikan is probably the two we've seen the most of.
Yeah, and they've gone.
And when they have gone into them as characters, interesting, greatly acted, brilliant. It's none to them. It's all to do with underwriting for those characters and not...
Yeah.
Let them have a moment.
So Michael passes the test because, of course, she does. We've talked through all of that, but Book.
I did like it when she's doing the test out, when she first goes in, I wish I had Tilly. And at one point, Book turns around and goes, Tilly had been just the same as me. She'd have been just as.
Yeah, that's good.
That's nice.
I'm a computer program. I'm going to give these responses to whoever I look like.
And Book hints that he's going to tell her a secret about the last part, but we don't get to see it. Now, fortunately, there's only two episodes left to go, so we're not doing a what's going on with Jack Crusher thing where they dragged it out for what felt like forever. We're either going to find out what Book told her next week or the week after. At least we've got
a We're going to find out next week in the episode Lagrange Point.
You'd assume so.
Because she even says this in the episode that I found out something, how we get to the next part, that they're going to be able to do without knowing this.
Yeah, exactly. But whenever they withhold information, it made me think of that time in Picard where it was like, now, Jack Crusher, we find out who you really are, but not yet. And then we got another episode, and the next episode had the same cliffhanger, and then they saved it until the end of the teaser for the net, and you were just like, come on. Yeah, anyway,
that was probably one of the biggest failings of season three of Picard, was the same cliffhanger every week.
But anyway, so we've got that to look forward to, and this is where they have to escape from the brain, and this is where she says the thing.
Woo!
And yeah, the pretty cool thing they do with the... like, we'll eject the plasma thing as we jump and make it look like we've been destroyed. I thought that was cool.
It was, we're going to open the shuttle bay and eject everything in the shuttle bay, and also want to discharge everything in the nacelles.
Yeah, I thought that.
Just as you heard a black alert.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was really clever. So we're going to jump out. So there's no warp trail, because I don't know you can't track how they jump. But it's going to leave debris and all sorts.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good twist, and it
works. It's like they've been shot to fuck. You think you've killed us.
You've also got it keeps the tension ratcheted up without a feeling forced. So like, they've got to make repairs before they can get there. They know, Burnham's already set like. Right, we've got to get there at least an hour before they do. So they've only got an hour to play with. So they can do some stuff on the planet, get some stuff solved, get some kind of character beats in before then you have a big showdown with the brain. It's so nicely set up for the next two episodes.
Oh,
to get that
speaking
showdown.
Of the brain, there's a major change in the mole has finally had enough and takes out the Primark. You could call it a Primark closing down sale. Oh, there you go.
You said it, not me.
but yeah, I thought this was a really good ending to the episode. And yeah, she asserts her leadership over them, which does make me wonder, is there going to be a lot of conflict next week? Because I don't think that the Federation really were only trying to keep it away from the brain so they didn't do horrible things with it. But if all Mole wants to do with it is bring Locke back, then surely we can make an agreement there.
No, but then the brain have got it, then is the problem, I think.
Yeah, it's like,
just let you use it.
It's like Mole could do this because the Primark, he made this holy oath that he wouldn't do something and he was off to break it. Plus, he was off to destroy green heritage and all that.
Yeah.
Just for his own ends. And, like, no one had a problem. Yet, you are now a traitor to green kind.
So you think Mol will still be under political pressure from the rest of the brain to do nasty things?
Well, of course she will, because she's now the queen of the brain.
Well, you think about it. I actually like, there's a slight echo. I don't know if anyone else picked up on this, but in the first series of Discovery, when you got the torch... there was a torchbearer who was leading the way to the next emperor.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas in this case, you've got the kind of like the main guy's dead. She's stepping in. She can't be a Primark. I believe the official term they use if it's an outsider is an Aldi. So she'll be the Aldi until the Primark comes back. It was all for that joke. Yeah, but there is a kind of echoing, but it was
maybe. Yeah, there is a little bit. Yeah, I forgot all that with Tecumseh and the torchbearer.
It kind of does. It does mirror it a little bit. It's interesting.
Yeah. But I really like this setup, and I like that the episode finishes on her, like, I'm in charge, let's go.
I don't like that she's Queen Brain.
I do.
Queen Brain.
Queen Brain.
Just name me shops now, Dave.
Next, yeah.
I thought it was
It's quite happy.
I thought it was more Lidl.
Yeah.
Well, it may be a little to you, but it made a big difference to them.
The Breen strike me as the sort of people who'd shop in that middle aisle of Lidl where you get all your weird stuff. They should do like a reality show where people go to different Lidls and see what we, and then you've got to build some out of it. It should be like Scrappy Challenge or Robot Wars. It should be Robot Wars, but you're only allowed to use what you can buy off the middle of aisle of Lidl, and then you've got a robot.
You know they've got a show called Aldi the Middle Aisle. It could be the Middle Aisle, the challenge. You know, it's like
Lidl has the same, doesn't it? I think that's a challenge, and I think we should do that. Let's have it. Should we do a budget?
We'll do a Robot Wars. Challenge. You
know, they've done it at the Sci-Fi Weekend before, where they've had kind of like a cosplay build. Like you've got to build sci-fi with stuff that you find. Like that would be
We'll workshop this off air. Anyway, so that wraps us up for this episode. We've got two episodes to go of the season.
Coming for breaks next week. Yay!
Got what? Sorry.
Jonathan Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes directing next week.
I thought you said we've got Frakes next week. It's like, no, we're going through
it. Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, we've got Frakes in
next. Jonathan Frakes does an episode.
We do. Usually Frakes that's a sign of quality. So in the meantime, you can get in touch with us at RetrekPod. You can email us, retrekpod@gmail.com. You can check us out on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
I'm still building the Doomsday Machine, but I ran out of fiber optic. I've used 15 meters. I've got some more on delivery that I'm expecting tomorrow, so I can finish this and get the next video out.
There we go. And Dr. Squee, what have we got on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as we continue to go through the episodes of Doctor Who, the series, we've actually, basically when we did the first series, which Jim was on, we did it pre-recorded, but I had a devil of a job uploading it, so we're just doing live. So it's we're kind of aiming Sunday, Monday, basically. So this week's episode, which we covered the episode Boom, written by Stephen Moffat, is up now. So you can go to youtube.com/DocSquee and watch that now. And this week's episode, as I say, will be Sunday night, I think. But yeah, it's
and a great episode that was as well.
Really great. And like, it wasn't even a bottle episode. It was like the tip of the bottle because he couldn't even move from the spot he was on. That's how like, and it was dynamite. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be back. Go on.
So just very quickly, because today is the last day of it. One of our guests, Kenton Hall, who was on Dr. Squee show talking about Gallifrey's Lens, talking about this week's episode of Doctor Who, has an album out now. That's an Indiegogo. If you just look up Kenton Hall on Indiegogo, you can find all the details. Please do support independent artists.
Of course. And we will be back next week. But in the meantime.
Bye, David.
In the meantime. Let's fly.
Let's fly.
Let's dragonfly.
Fascinating.